Well, our topic tonight is going to be on just some tips on time management and also on good financial management. And maybe I'll start out with financial management first. And I did give you a handout called Keys to Financial Security. Maybe you can take a look at that. And it was nice when all of you were going around and introducing yourselves and telling how many years you were married. Because one husband stood up once and he said, you know, my wife and I have been married for 37 years and we've never agreed once. And she spoke up and said, 38 years. Well, as far as the reason why it would be important to touch on good financial management is because according to many studies, that's one of the reasons, financial stress is one of the reasons why so many marriages are breaking up. Other factors, of course, would be things like alcohol and other problems, but usually in the surveys, money problems tends to be way up there on the top of reasons why marriages don't last because of, you know, financial difficulties. So I thought it would be good for at least a few moments this evening to talk about financial management. And first of all, when we consider about money, we should first of all say that money is morally neutral. It's neither good nor bad. It can be used for great good, you know, for wonderful things, or it could be used for great harm. You know, the Bible doesn't say that money is the root of all evil. What does it say? The love of money is the root of all evil. So obviously, if somebody puts money ahead of God, or if that's their ultimate goal in life, or if they're filled with greed and avarice, then of course it would be wrong. However, if we use money as a good tool, to help people, to help, you know, send kids to Catholic school or pay doctors' bills or give money to charity, of course, it's a very good thing. Money is like television. It could be used for great good or for great harm, or the Internet could be used for great good or great harm. So we want to look at some tips now on good financial management. Basically, I could sum it up in one sentence. Spend less than you make. Aren't you glad you came tonight? To spend less than you make. Now, because there's a great quotation that if you spend more than you make, Jim Rohn once said, if your outgo exceeds your income, your upkeep becomes your downfall. I think that's rather clever. So it's possible, even if you're making $10,000 a month, to go broke. You know how? Spend $11,000 a month. So the average American lives on 110% of their income. They're always buying on credit. They're always spending more than they make. They're living beyond their means. So many people have too much month left at the end of the money. So what we want to do is encourage self-discipline in your spending habits. And as one husband said after his wife put a lot of money on the credit cards. He said, I have to give my wife plastic surgery. I'm going to take away her credit card. So again, beware of the credit cards. Beware of the danger of immediate gratification, because we do live in a society that encourages immediate gratification. And so because of that, so many couples get into a lot of financial debt ahead of time, sometimes $10,000, $20,000. Or on the credit cards, and with the interest that people are paying, it's very difficult to get out of that hole. And then there comes friction and stress, which causes breakdown of communication and oftentimes some serious marital problems. So really, the first key would be to practice self-discipline, right? Self-discipline in spending and in being really beware of the credit cards. One person I know, they keep their credit card in a block of ice in the freezer. Because that way, if they see something on TV, they really want to buy it, they have to melt the whole block of ice. And by that time, you know, the desire for that particular new Bose acoustic wave radio has diminished, or that new set of Callaway golf clubs has diminished. So, of course, credit cards can be very helpful, and they are certainly helpful. One recommendation, of course, is to pay them off at the end of each month, and then to make sure you pay off the high-interest credit cards first, and to get out of debt as quickly as possible. A second idea for time management tips it comes from Jim Rohn, and he says, try to practice the 70-20-10 rule. This means live on 70% of your income, invest 20%, and give 10% to charity. So he says this is what he recommends to couples. Try to live on 70%. See, if the average American is living on 110%, then we'll be much wiser if we can live on 70% of our income and invest 20%. Now, he recommends spending 20% out of that 20%, putting 10% into what he calls active capital and 10% into passive capital. By active capital, he recommends using your own creativity and ingenuity to make that money work for you. For example, some people are very good about buying cars, fixing them up, repainting them, and then selling them. Others will do the same thing with homes or houses. Others will find a good piece of property and then be able to resell it. So he recommends spending 10% of your money on active investment, something that you do. The other 10% he recommends for passive capital, namely invest it in a good, for example, mutual fund or something like that that will give you perhaps maybe 10, 15, or 20% interest. I know last month you had a speaker that talked about some of the different mutual funds, and it's important that you investigate before you invest and make sure that the money that you're putting into the mutual funds is going into companies and corporations that are promoting good family values and not abortion and other kinds of things like that. And then, so that's the 20%. So invest 20% and then give 10% to charity. This is called tithing, which the Bible highly recommends, and it encourages, and it says if you tithe, you'll never have any financial problems whatsoever. And every couple that I've met that tithes, none of them have ever had any financial difficulties. Another tip on financial management is also comes from, this actually comes from Brian Tracy, a national speaker, and he says, this is the definition of rich people and the definition of poor people. The definition of poor people is that a poor person spends their money and saves what's left. A rich person saves his money and spends what's left. Do you see the difference? In other words, it's pay yourself first. Set a certain amount that you want to invest each and every month, and then practice a self-discipline to live on what's left. Fourth tip would be to read books on financial management and financial planning. A couple of ones that I've read that I would recommend, first of all, is one called The Millionaire Next Door. How many of you have read that? Has anybody read that? The Millionaire Next Door? It's an excellent book. And basically, just to sum up some of the things that it mentions is that your typical millionaire is a lot different than you would suspect. Oftentimes, it's the person living right next door that might not drive the most expensive car, that might not go on the most lavish vacations, but the qualities of self-made millionaires, first of all, are they keep strict accounts, they don't waste money, they don't lose money on bad investments, they avoid get-rich-quick schemes, and they've taken, on average, over 20 years to accumulate their fortune. So they take the long-time perspective of getting rich slowly over the course of a lifetime. They invest money in things that appreciate rather than depreciate. For example, a lot of them don't buy new cars. They buy used cars because they realize if they buy, let's say, a brand new car, $30,000, in 7 years, that car basically will be worth very little. But that same $30,000 invested in a very good mutual fund, for example, will double within 7 years. If you get 10% interest, in 7 years, whatever amount you put in, 7 years later will be doubled. So the one couple, let's say if they buy a brand new car, 7 years later, that car has 100,000 miles on it, and they can trade it in for a little bit, but that same amount, $30,000 invested with 10% interest, is now $60,000 that they now have. So these are just some of the principles in the book called The Millionaire Next Door. You can also get it on audio tape as well. And another book I'd recommend is called The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. Has anybody read that? Okay, good. Ray's read it. Richest Man in Babylon, George Clason. Excellent book. There's also a more recent version of that called The Wealthy Barber. Anybody read that? The Wealthy Barber was out a couple years ago. Renee's read that? How about Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich? Anybody read that? Okay, Wayne's read it. Okay, it is a classic. Jim Rohn says he's read that several dozen times. I read it four or five times myself. Because it does talk about things like faith and self-discipline and courage and perseverance, and really the virtues and the qualities that you'll need to be successful in any field whatsoever. Now, a fifth tip on good financial management, besides reading the good books and paying yourself first and living on the 70-20-10 rule and spending less than you make, would be the miracle of compound interest. And if you notice on your handout, you'll have a chart. And basically what this is saying is that it's not how much you make, it's how much you save and invest that will make the difference. For example, if you take a look at the chart here, if you're 20 years old and invest $100 each month, which almost anybody can do, $100 a month, again, if you get 10% interest, by age 65, you'll have over $1 million in that account. Now, if you wait till you're 30, you have to put in $266 each month. If you wait till you're 40, $759. Wait till you're 50, over $2,000. So in other words, the earlier you start, the easier it is to accumulate this particular amount in savings. For example, let's say there's a couple that a person makes $25,000 a year. All they would have to do is invest 10% of that into savings. That would be $2,500 a year into savings. By the time they're 65, they have $1.8 million in savings. So it's possible for anybody in America to become financially independent if they start early enough and are disciplined to put at least $100 a month into savings from the time that they're in their early 20s. And again, that's just saying a 10% interest. Many of these funds are gaining 15, 20, 25% these days. So basically, it's not the amount of money that you're taking in, it's the plan you have on your investments. Now, Brian Tracy recommends if you can't start with saving 10% of your income, save 1% of your income. Every night when you come home and you have a change in your pocket, put that into a jar. And every month, or every couple months, take it down to the bank and put it in the bank. And this will begin to accumulate. And this particular fund of $100 a month or $200 a month should never be touched. It's not what you're using to save for a new car or for a house. It's just a separate account that would never be touched. A last idea under good financial management would be to become more valuable to the marketplace. In other words, work on yourself. Consider yourself as the president of your own personal services corporation and try to increase your value to the marketplace by becoming more well-read, by listening to tapes, by going on seminars, and by working hard. And Jim Rohn makes a good point. He says, the people that work hard on their job will make a living. Those who work hard on themselves will make a fortune. He calls it the secret of personal development. And Brian Tracy recommends that you spend 3% of your income on personal development, books, tapes, seminars. He says if you spend 3% on personal development, namely of listening to good tapes, developing your skills, going on seminars, improving your time management, he says you won't have any problems in your financial life. Any questions before we move on to just a couple tips on time management? Yes. I would recommend calling Guardian Investments out in Front Royal, and John Clark is the one that spoke a couple weeks ago. There, I'll give you their 888 number, which is a toll-free number, called Guardian Investments. It's run by a couple of very good Catholic men, and they have a particular computer program where, for example, you can just give them the name of your mutual fund, and they can do an analysis of that. For example, some funds, let's say 20% of those funds might go to pro-abortion or Planned Parenthood or corporations that are, let's say, doing things that would not be in harmony with good Christian values. So it's 888-764-2423. 764-2423. So they're the only investors I know. I imagine there are some others. They're the only ones that I know that have this kind of a service that they'll do for free. Anybody else? Yeah, Ray.
This one person you're quoting, Jim Rohn?
Yeah.
Who is that?
Okay, Jim Rohn, spelled his name is R-O-H-N. Has anybody heard of Jim Rohn? Okay, very good. I've gone on about half a dozen of his seminars. He's written about four or five books. He's made over 100 tapes, and he's done quite a few videos. And he's a national and international speaker on sales, management, and personal development. So he's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, so he's like Brian Tracy.
Similar to Brian Tracy. Yeah, Brian Tracy, for those of you who might not have heard of him, he's spoken in over 80 countries. He's written a number of books. He's made thousands, hundreds of tapes. And so, again, a very excellent speaker on time management and financial management. He just spoke in D.C. at the Success 1999 with Peter Lowe. Joe Montana spoke, and John Walsh from America's Most Wanted, Elizabeth Dole, and Les Brown. And usually they get some top names, and they had 15,000 people at the MCI Center. So I went to that a couple weeks ago. And Brian Tracy was one of the speakers. Zig Ziglar was one of the speakers. So they're all very inspirational and very motivational. So I try to go to at least two or three seminars a year just to get some new ideas and some insights. Yes, Tom.
I would put in another plug for the young man who runs Guardian. He spoke to the group, as you said. I don't know his exact age, but from my perspective, he's in your age category. I think they're expecting their third child, if I'm not mistaken. They're looking at the world the same way all of you are. And what he had said is that I want to try to make my living based on my Catholic values. So he's got some really neat brochures, some great investment plans, and he's trying to say we'll run a mutual fund company that is Catholic values based. If you give him a call, he'd love to talk to you. And maybe we should even plan to get him to come and talk to the group again at some time, because he's a good speaker.
That's excellent. Anybody else? Are there questions on financial management or comments, suggestions, or ideas?
Question on
yeah.
10% charity.
Yeah.
What percentage would you say goes to the church? And I mean, you know, what do you do with the Can You Save a Life Today telemarketer calls?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that they all have wonderful causes.
Right. Well, as far as how much of that 10% should go to the parish, that's up to you. For example, some of you might be very involved in pro-life or in supporting a home for unwed mothers or supporting the poor down in Bonica or in other third world countries. So it's something that you need to just pray about and discern and make your own decision on who you want to help. But it's very important that we do help those that are less fortunate than ourselves and to help in any way that you feel will be best. Some people will give 10% to a parish, some will give it to another cause. It's entirely up to you.
So if you have your causes you're supporting your church, you shouldn't feel bad about turning down every...
Right, exactly. Yeah, you certainly can't say yes to everybody that calls on the phone. Okay. Good. Yeah, exactly. If somebody was good at decision making, I think that was Renee back there. Okay, good. Anybody else on that? Yeah.
The only way we've discovered that been really helpful for us is that we want to get to this formula. And what we've done is every time we've gotten a raise or a promotion, we've raised the percentage.
Good.
So that we eat in, we don't take as much of the raise, but we raise it 1% or 2% every time so that we can
That's a very good point. For example, you might not be able to start at 10%, so just start at 1%. It's up to you. And then maybe work it up to 2 or 3 or 4%. It's certainly up to you, but the Bible does recommend eventually being able to do 10%. Now there's a Brian Tracy in one of his tapes says there's such a thing called as Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law says that expenses will rise to meet income. Okay? So if your income increases, automatically people want to spend more. So So the only way, he says, to become financially independent is to violate Parkinson's law and put a wedge between your rising income and your rising expenses. So if you can keep your expenses the same or diminish them at the same time that your income is increasing, then he says that's how you won't have financial problems.
I can't think of the man's name. There's a speaker. I'm subscribing to his newsletter, and I forget his name. He was an accountant for one of the big companies, gave that up. He now runs a couple of Catholic nonprofits. And he puts out a newsletter for young couples, especially couples trying to make it on one income. Does that ring a bell with you?
Is it out in California? Okay, then this is probably, it's here. It's called Finances for Today's Catholic Family, the Financial Foundations for the Family.
Yeah.
On the back of this handout, you'll see their phone number and some of the information that they have. Okay. Take a look. I might actually have some more. Some of them have it on the back and some of them don't. Okay.
I think it's $15 and it's maybe quarterly. But he has a lot of tips. He has also where young couples will call in and give suggestions. And in addition, he's got really neat stories on people who are not only, you know, making it on small incomes, but enjoying their lives.
Yeah, he's excellent. I've seen him interviewed on television on some of the Catholic stations. And he has a book out called Finances for Today's Catholic Family, $12.95, and then The Financial Organizer, which is what you're talking about. That's $15. And then, so I'll give you his phone number in case some of you didn't get the handout. It's area code 909-699-7066. Financial Foundations for the Family out in Temecula, California. So they are doing an excellent job as well. Well, lastly tonight, we'll just mention a few things about good time management. Yes.
A couple other questions.
Yeah, Dan.
When you consider your resources and you come to some allocation of what goes to charity and what's invested, talking about disposable income or
taxes?
After taxes? Most of them say this is what you do after taxes.
Church as much as, you know, paying taxes.
Right. That's excellent. we'll accept it. We'll accept it.
I'd accept it.
Yeah.
So, how do you work? That's one question. Let me spit these out while I got it in my mind.
Okay.
The other is, how does a person rationalize in their own mind what's done with their taxes? I mean, for example, some 40% of our taxes goes to entitlements and social programs. How does a Catholic view the use of that money? And obviously, much of the money goes to programs that none of us would prefer it does.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. government supports Planned Parenthood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was my second question. And rattle them off. I had a third one.
It'll come to you, I'm sure. Basically, in regards to your first question, Jim Rohn says that you live on you do the 70-20-10 after taxes. He says what you pay your taxes first and then what you have left over, he recommends dividing it up in this way. Some people will give 10% before taxes. That's up to you. That's a decision that you could make. 10% before taxes, 10% after taxes, that's your decision. Now, as far as what the government does with our tax money, obviously we should elect good Christian leaders that will help to try to change some of these things, if we possibly can, to try to change the system to support family values and respect for the sanctity of life at every stage. So we just do our best to change things in the political arena, as well as prayer and sacrifice and penance to try to change our country. If there's nothing that can be done about where the taxes go, then obviously we'd be bound to, we have to pay what we have to pay. But, I mean, there are certain legitimate ways, I guess, to cut down on taxes there are certain things that financial advisors can tell you on how to, you know, give certain amounts of charity and have certain amount of tax write-offs. So make sure you take advantage of any legitimate tax write-offs that you can. so you pay as little as you have to. So, but I would just say that if there's nothing that can be done, then we just have to, you know, Jesus said, give to God what belongs to God, but give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. So we do have to pay the taxes.
Father, I'd like to share something that I said on the Yeshikon weekends with Junior Cups. For the first 25 years of our marriage, Bert had been talking about our finances. It took a marriage kind of weekend to wake me up. It's a joint venture.
Exactly.
A joint decision, and rather than argue over it, you should be discussing it as you go along.
Very good point.
It's kind of turned over here because I know this is not mine.
Well, I think Paul's point is very good, is that if you're working as a team, you can accomplish a lot more than you could individually. A couple months ago when I gave a talk here on the seven C's of marriage, I talked about working as a team, and I used Zig Ziglar's example of the Belgian horse that can pull 8,000 pounds of freight. And yet two Belgian horses harnessed together, pulling in the same direction as a team, can pull 32,000 pounds. So what this, I think, can tell us is that if a husband and wife are working as a team, they can accomplish so much more than a person could individually. I'm glad you brought that up. Anybody else? Yes?
This might kind of be a time management issue to get through, but I know in our relationship, we've planned, we want to invest, we want to do these, we have these goals, and it feels like we never get around to it. We talk about it, we never get around to it. So I'd be interested if you have any suggestions during the time management section about how, as a couple, to you know, come together to meet about not just the money issues, but the other issues, like when to have structured time or not structured time, or just maybe some suggestions about how to meet. It seems like there are a lot of issues that I get in the mail and wonder, well, what does my husband think about those? And, but they don't get brought up or they get punched away or something. So any suggestions?
Okay, that's a very good point. Yeah, it is important to have a certain time where you can talk about, let's say, some of the things you get in the mail. Maybe you can just leave it on the dining room table, so, or the kitchen table, wherever you have the most easily accessible communication time. Sometimes in the morning it might be difficult to talk about things, but maybe right after dinner it's a chance to talk about things. A lot of it will depend on your own relationship. Some people like to talk more right after they get home from work. Some prefer to wait till after dinner and talk in the evening before retirement. So, I mean, there's a lot of it will depend on your own, when you find the best and the worst times to communicate. But there are little things you can do. Writing notes to each other would be a suggestion, or say, "What, honey, what do you think about this?" And maybe leave it on the plate. Or there are places that you might, leaving things in the bathroom is a great place to do some reading. Yeah, and the mirror is a good idea. Any suggestions on that? Anybody have any recommendations on that? It's a good question.
The same man who puts out that Financial Foundations newsletter has a tape. And the problem with listening to these tapes is they look at them. They're so good. One of the things he said, and I walked around the house saying, "My God, what did I think of this stuff 30 years ago?" He does recommend a financial plan. He recommends that the couple do it together. And just as Paul and Bernadette said, I was the same as you were back for 20 years. I didn't know what our finances were. Diane took care of them. But he says that if you do the financial planning, starting first with your own goals in life, not even how much you want to save, but seek first the kingdom of God and what do you want out of life. And it almost sounds exciting to sit down and talk about where do we want to go in life and how much I'm not even going to think of there. I think of this earlier. But I think that newsletter just puts out in itself a lot of good ideas for couples to sit down and talk about.
Exactly. That really does tie in very well with the time management aspect. And if you take a look at this particular handout, this is called How to Live a Well-Rounded Life. And this is sort of the first draft. In the new draft, God's going to be right there in the center, and then from that, all the spokes that go out from there. So basically, this is a way to determine sort of how you can rate yourself right now on how you're doing in the different areas of your life. For example, they say if you want to lose weight, the best thing you should do is stand on a scale and weigh yourself to find out where you are now. If your finances are a mess, the best thing to do is to make a financial statement, make a financial report, find out how much you owe, find out how much you have saved. So basically, take a look at where you are right now. And so this is the one way in which you can sort of take a look on how you're doing in different areas of your life. The most important one, of course, is the spiritual life, your relationship with God, your practicing of your faith, your prayer life. And so you can rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, how you feel you're doing in your spiritual life. A 5 or a 6, well, that might be an indication that maybe you need to put a little bit more time into your spiritual life. Once you determine where you are, say, what can I do in my daily life to bring myself a little bit closer to a 10? And it might be something very simple, and just by implementing that, you can improve your spiritual life. Another one would be health and physical fitness. Scale of 1 to 10. How are you doing in your health, energy level, physical fitness? Another one would be your relationship with your parents or siblings, emotional well-being, friendship, social life, your finances, your job, career, continuing education, relationship with your children, with your spouse, other developing skills and working on hobbies, and then your intellectual growth, your reading. These aren't in any particular order, but once you do this, let's say you'll take a pencil and color in from 1 to 10 on these different areas. You might find that, let's say your financial life is a 10, but your spiritual life is a 1. Okay, well, that would show a life out of balance. When we're talking about financial, it's really we're talking about financial responsibility. For example, some people are so focused on their job and career that their relationship with their spouse and their children is suffering. Well, this will be able to help you tell if that's the way things are going in your life. Now, once you color in this area, then draw a circle inside the big circle and to see if it is relatively round or if it's very lopsided. There are, in our society, unfortunately, a lot of people that are very focused on their career and job and might be neglecting their family. And as Rabbi Kushner says, he's never met a man that on his deathbed said, I wish I spent more time in the office. Everybody says, I wish I spent more time with my family, with my home life. So this is one way in which you can take a look at how you're doing in these different areas. Let's say if you need to improve your intellectual life, let's say you haven't read a book in a long time, since maybe leaving high school or college, well, that might be that might be an indication that maybe your intellectual life needs a little bit more work. Okay, let me give you a couple tips on good time management. Basically, time management is life management. And the purpose of good time management is to make yourself make it more effective use of your time so that you can spend more time with your family and more time with those that you love. And this is a great sentence from Brian Tracy. He says, the purpose of good time management is to help you spend quality of time at work so that you have quantity of time at home. Isn't that great? Quality of time at work. Work hard and focus on your work while you're there so that you can get it all done so that you can spend quantity of time at home. Some people say, well, Father, I don't spend much time with my kids, but what I spend is good quality time. And, of course, we know that quality moments only come about during quantity time. And there was one little girl who really wanted to play with her dad every time he came home from work, but he always brought all his work home, like a big suitcase, a big briefcase full of work. And, you know, she said, Daddy, can we play something? And so he said, no, I have so much extra work, I have to get it done. And so she goes to her mommy and says, you know, Mommy, why is it that Daddy, you know, has so much work and why can't he play with me? And the mommy says, well, he's very busy at work. They give him a lot of extra things to take home. You know, it's like homework. And the little girl says, why don't they just put him in a slower group? Isn't that great? That's a true story. Why don't you just put them in a slower group? Well, a couple suggestions here on how to get 2 extra hours a day. How many of you would like 2 extra hours a day? Okay, almost all of you. Maybe some of you don't want 2 more hours a day. What's that?
I'll settle for half of that.
Okay, even an extra hour a day. The one suggestion is to use a day timer or a day planner. I use the Franklin Planner. I've been using it for about 9 or 10 years. I find it to be phenomenal. And the main thing in using a day timer is that you can basically get an extra hour or two every day if you'll do a few things. First of all, you should spend at least 15 minutes every night planning the next day. See, 1 minute in planning saves 10 minutes in execution. Some people say, I don't have enough time to plan. Well, it's an investment. Basically, let's say you have to drive to Baltimore. You don't know how to get there. 1 minute at looking at a map, it might save you 10 minutes of getting lost, right? Isn't that true? Or an hour.
And a fight.
And a fight as well. So you get a 1,000% return on investment when you spend time in solitude and planning, when you plan the upcoming day, when you plan the upcoming week, the upcoming month, and the upcoming year, and planning for the future. The best time I find is the night before. It's a great time to plan your next day. That way, as you're sleeping, your subconscious can be working on things throughout the night, and you can save, as I said, 2 extra hours a day. However, when you use a day timer, what I recommend is use only one calendar, only one day timer. If you write things in 2 or 3 separate calendars, it can cause a lot of confusion. See, this is a portable desk. Okay, your day timer is a portable desk. And before I got the Franklin Planner, my desk used to be a mess. Little tiny slips of paper and post-it notes all over, and my desk used to have piles of paper. After I got this, my desk is clear. I'm able to get through all the things I need to get through. So it can help eliminate all these slips of paper that are floating around. It can help you achieve order in your life because everything is kept in one place. Now, what's recommended is that, as Tom mentioned, spend some time thinking of your values and your goals. Okay, your values and your goals. So your values are what you really care about in life. Namely, like a lot of these things, your relationship with God, your relationship with your spouse, with your children, your emotional, intellectual, and physical well-being. All these things are the values, what you care about. So first of all, think about what your values are. And a good way to determine this is to ask yourself the question, what would you do, how would you spend your time if you were told today you had 6 months to live? That you'd enjoy perfect health for 6 months, but 6 months from tonight, you would pass away. How would you spend your time? It really helps to focus what you really care about in life. Who would you spend your time with? Would you try to reconcile a relationship with a father, mother, grandfather, grandmother? Would you call a brother or sister that you haven't seen in a long time? Would you go on retreat? Would you go to confession? Would you start going to church? You know, how would you spend your time if you knew you only had 6 months to live? That can help determine what your values are in life. And then think, what would I do if you had 6 weeks to live, 6 days to live, 6 hours to live, 6 minutes to live? And that can help you focus on what your true values are. See, a lot of times people in their lives don't ever sit and think about what they truly value and what their priorities are. Jim Rohn says, don't major in minor things. Many people major in just minor things, things that are really not that necessary. Also, as Tom mentioned, you should write down your goals. And your goals can be things such as your family goals, your personal goals, your career and work goals, and also your spiritual development goals. And as we mentioned, it's important to live a life in balance. If somebody spends too much time, let's say, on their career, not enough time on their family, or too much time building up material things in this world, not enough on the spiritual world. Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. We have to make sure we're spending enough time in our relationship with God and in prayer. A couple interesting things about goal setting is that all the experts say that the goals need to be clear, specific, and written down. There was a study done about 30 years ago at Harvard, where they found that of a graduating class, 3% of them had clear written down goals. 25 years later, they interviewed all the living graduates of that particular class. You know what they found? That the 3% that had clear written goals on graduation were worth more financially than the 97% that did not have clear written goals. Isn't that amazing? That's just from a financial aspect, but goals can help us in a spiritual aspect, like St. Therese of Little Flower often talked about her desire to become a saint. That was her goal in life. That was her desire, to obtain union with God. So one question to ask yourself is, describe your life 5 years from now. Where would you like to be living? What kind of job would you like to be doing? So describe your life. What would be your perfect life? What would be, where would you like to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now? How would you describe a perfect job or a perfect day in that life? So a good time management system will first of all help you first focus on your values, then on your goals. We call them long-range goals. And then there's such thing as short-range goals or monthly goals. Now, take out a pen if you have it and turn over that one sheet. And if you have a pen, if not, just maybe try to remember this. There's one suggestion that they teach in the Franklin Planner system, which can be used for any time management system. It's called the productivity pyramid. So draw a triangle, this productivity pyramid, and then draw four lines across like this. At the very bottom, write the word values. Okay? See, this is the foundation of your life, is your values, what you really care about. The next level is your long-range goals. The next level up, this is long-range goals. The next level is short-range goals. And at the very top is daily tasks. Daily tasks. See, if you go on a seminar, they'll charge you $250 for this, okay? And I'm giving it to you for free. Okay, now this is a wonderful thing. Your values are here, your long-range goals are here, your short-range goals, and then your daily tasks. Now, the secret of peace of mind and happiness is to make sure that your daily tasks are in conformity with your goals and your values. Let's say if they really value their family, but if their daily tasks take them always away from their family, let's say on travel, they're never around, they're not going to be at peace because their daily tasks are not in harmony with their values and their goals. And whenever we do something on our daily task that is in conformity with our values, we feel at peace. For example, let's say one of your values and goals is good health. So let's say you exercise 10 minutes today. Well, that'll be in conformity with your value of good health and nutrition. And let's say one of your values is intellectual growth. So listening to tapes in the car, reading good books, reading the Bible, these things will be in conformity with your values and goals. One example I'd like to use, let's say one of your values is your relationship with Christ. You really want to develop that this coming year. That's your value, your spiritual life. Well, let's say your long-range goal would be to read the New Testament this year. That's a good long-range goal. I want to read the entire New Testament this year. Okay, your short-range goal could be to read the Gospel of Matthew. Okay, that's your short-range goal. That's your monthly goal, for example. Then, what should be your daily activity? Well, reading one chapter. Matthew's Gospel, what, 25, 30 chapters long? If you have it on your daily task list, your daily activity would be, let's say, to read one chapter of Matthew's Gospel. To see how this is helping you achieve your short-range goal of reading one of the Gospels, your long-range goal of reading the New Testament, which ultimately helps you develop your spiritual life with Christ, and that is your ultimate value and what you really care about. Now, let's say somebody turns away from Christ. Let's say they stop going to church, they stop going to confession, they stop praying, stop reading the Bible. If this had been one of their values, they're not going to be at peace. if they're doing things, let's say going out and committing sin, that's going to take away their peace of mind and their peace of heart, because it's violating their values and ultimately their goal, which would have been to get to heaven. So this is really a wonderful productivity pyramid. So you can use this for anything. Let's say one of your values is to become a better parent. Well, some of your long-range goals, some people have, they want to read the 10 best books ever written on parenting. Their short-range goal would be to read one book, and their daily task would be to read 10 pages. See how that works. So I think that's a really wonderful thing, and I've been trying to practice that as well. So if you use a day timer, first of all, spend time looking at your values, your goals, and then make sure your daily tasks are taking you in the direction of your values and your goals. Now, just maybe to conclude, a couple other ideas, at least what I find beneficial of using a day timer, day runner, day planner, whatever kind you want to use, is that it gives you an opportunity to have your appointments in there, your notes that you might want to take, and also your a prioritized daily task list, which is a little different than a to-do list. See, a to-do list is valuable, but a prioritized daily task list is even more valuable. That's where after you write down everything you want to do the next day, you put A, B, C, D, or E next to it, and then you can even number those. A stands for something that you must do today. B stands for something that you should do. C, it'd be nice to do. D, you delegate it to somebody else to do, like your spouse, right? E, eliminate. Things might not need to be done. See, it's okay to procrastinate, but procrastinate on low-value things. Procrastinate on things that don't need to be done at all. The worst thing is doing phenomenally well what does not need to be done at all. So make sure that you can eliminate certain things. For example, let's say you get a lot of junk mail. Well, the best thing to do is to not waste the time of opening, just toss it right in your circular file. They say the wastebasket is man's best friend. Even better than a dog, right? It's man's best friend. So you can save a lot of time just by throwing things directly in the trash can. In fact, there was a study done which said that if you live to be 60 years old, you'll spend 20 years sleeping, you'll spend 7 years in the bathroom, 6 years eating, 5 years waiting for things, like waiting in line, waiting in traffic, 4 years cleaning your house, 3 years in meetings, 1 year looking for lost objects. So if you have devotion to St. Anthony, you can save a whole year of your life, okay? St. Anthony, help me find this thing. And you'll spend 8 months reading junk mail. So I can save you 8 months of your life. Just throw out the junk mail right away. Also, of course, they recommend the TRAF system, T-R-A-F. And T stands for toss it. Okay, when you get paper or paperwork or things in the mail, the best thing you can do to save yourself time is to toss it out. You can ask yourself the question, what is the worst possible thing that could happen to me if I throw away this piece of paper? And if it's going to jail, I wouldn't recommend throwing it out. If it's not showing up for your jury duty, I wouldn't recommend throwing it out. But a lot of stuff can be tossed out, and it's use the trash can generously. The R stands for refer it to somebody else. Pass it on to somebody. If you're at work, you could maybe pass it on to a coworker or somebody below you that you can delegate it to. A stands for take action. Take action on it. And they recommend, of course, single handling things. If you pick up a piece of paper, try to act on it, either toss it out, refer it to somebody, or act on it. If you put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up, you can use up a lot of time and energy on that one particular piece of paper. And then F stands for file it away. File it. But remember that 80% of the things you file, you'll never look at again. So it's best not to put stuff in the file if you can help it. Now, another suggestion in saving time is, and this is one way I can save you 2 hours a day, is just not watch television. Okay? Right. See, the average woman over 35 watches 30 to 40 hours of TV a week. 30 to 40 hours of TV a week. Brian Tracy says that in his study, the most successful people in America, the wealthiest people in America, watch less than a half an hour of TV a day, whereas the least successful people watch TV 4 to 8 hours a day. And, of course, they have the biggest TV as well, and it's right there in the living room. And there's a whole bunch of cars out there in the backyard, the front yard. And I have one of these calendars where, you know, it says that you may be a redneck if you find there's more appliances in your yard than there are in your house. You find a car when you're mowing your lawn, you know. So, in other words, we can eliminate a lot we can save a lot of time if we cut back or eliminate television, especially during Lent and Advent. That's one recommendation. Also, the newspaper. So many times we spend so much time reading the newspaper and the sports page and other things that really won't have any long-term effect on our life. Brian Tracy says, before you do anything, ask yourself the question, what will be the long-range benefit of this particular thing? For example, what's better, listening to a good motivational tape in the car or listening to the radio? What's better, saying the rosary in the car or listening to the radio? So you can basically ask yourself the question, what's the best use of my time right now? And try to always do the best use of your time right now. So many times we spend time in just useless socializing, and yet there will be no long-range benefit of that, no long-range benefit of reading the sports page. And yet, by reading a good book, that can make a dramatic impact upon our life. Stephen Covey talks about the difference between urgent things and important things. And he says urgent things might not be important, and important things might not be urgent. For example, the ringing telephone is urgent, but it might not be important. But reading a good book on how to have a better marriage might be important, but nobody reads it because the book doesn't ring. It just sits there. Okay? If books rang, we would pick them up. But they don't. They just sit there. So make sure that you do what's important as well as, you know, what might be urgent. So, and then I would also recommend, you know, listening to tapes in your car. Make good use of your time in your car. A couple statistics. The average American drives 12 to 25,000 miles a year, which is the equivalent of 500 to 1,000 hours a year you spend in your car, which is 12 to 24 40-hour weeks, which is the equivalent of one university semester every year. UCLA did a study that 1 year in driving around in the suburban area is the equivalent of 1 year of college education. And so that all the top salespeople listen to tapes in their car. See, one 60-minute tape is the equivalent of reading 40 pages. A 90-minute tape is equivalent of reading 60 pages. And you can go to the library and get a lot of these tapes for free. And so you can learn almost any skill by listening to tapes, whether it be a foreign language, how to remember names and faces, communication skills, how to get along with difficult people, working with jerks, that's a good one. Whatever it might be, you can learn something from listening to tapes. So they say not only should you become a bookworm, you should become a tapeworm. Isn't that great? Become a tapeworm as well as a bookworm. And lastly, read 1 hour a day in your chosen field, if you possibly can. See, 1 hour a day will be the equivalent of one book a week, which is 50 books a year or 500 books in 10 years. See, if you read 1 hour a day in 3 years on any topic, you would become an expert. 5 years, you'd be an international expert. So I'd recommend, if you can, read 1 hour a day in any field that you choose. It might be computers, it might be the Bible, it might be parenting, whatever you want to read about. But 1 hour a day, in whatever field that you're interested in, you'll be an expert in 3 to 5 years. This is what changed Ben Franklin's life. When he was working in Philadelphia, he would spend his lunch break reading. He would just eat and read. And he says he attributed all his great success as a statesman to that 1 hour a day of reading. So any comments or questions on time management? Comments or questions, time management? Wayne?
For those of us who are parents, I'm assuming Silly Songs and Cookie Monster and Friends don't count as educational tapes in your box.
Well, if you're spending time with your kids, then that's great. Then that's you're doing what you should be doing then. Now you might turn the kids on the Bishop Sheen tapes, you know, or something like that. I mean, oftentimes if you're, it might help them sleep when they're in the back of the car. I mean, there are ways. A lot of you are driving your kids around to ballet and soccer and things, and it's a great time. Use your time in the car. When the kids are out there on the soccer field, you might be able to listen to some tapes or take a book along. See, somebody else had their hand up. Yeah.
Do you think you always have to be productive? It seems like there are times when it's a good almost to waste time. It's good to look through the thumbnail. It's kind of mindless.
Actually, you should waste a lot of time with your kids. I mean, because any time spent with your kids or with your spouse is very valuable time. There's a saying that you're going to have to spend time with your kids one time during your life, either when they're young training them or when they're old visiting them in prison. But sometime in your life you have to spend time with your kids, okay? Either young or when they're old. But you're right, I mean, obviously, you know, listening to music and spending time with those you love. I mean, these are relaxing things. See, remember, time management is so that you can spend more time in leisure, more time with those you love, more time with your kids and with your family. That's the purpose of it. Spend quality of time at work and quantity of time at home.